Hey, do you think, when I say blacksmithing, what do you think of? For a lot of people, I'm guessing they kind of go Games of Thrones type scene with bearded Highlanders banging out a broadsword. Well, in fact, the ancient craft is still alive today. So what do blacksmiths actually do? And what are they forging in the 21st century? To teach us about this old craft, I'm joined by Steve Hogwood. Now, Steve's a blacksmith from the 1910 ironworks in the Southern Highlands. And he's actually down in Wagga trying to procure some rare equipment. Steve, how are you this morning?
I'm really well. I believe it's still a bit wet and soggy up there in Sydney.
It is. It is a nasty day and there's a bit of a COVID spike, so you're in a very good place to not.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I timed it well then, going down with something warm.
Did. Okay, tell us a little bit about blacksmithing. What's it all about?
Well, I had to laugh when you said the bearded people living in the
Highlands. Do you have a beard?
Well, yeah, I do, actually. A very long, white one. Well, no, not a long one, but it's a white beard. So, yeah, I laughed when you said that. I thought, well, I'm sort of bearded and I do live in the Highlands. So there you go.
So good. Okay, so what are you doing with all that fire and that steel? Tell us about it.
Well, it's interesting because blacksmithing almost died out about 30, 40 years ago. In fact, when I really started to get interested in blacksmithing, people used to say to me, what are you doing? You know, it's a dying trade. And what's happened is that in recent years, a lot of youngsters have discovered knife making, axe making, that sort of stuff, hammer making. And it's kind of kept the general blacksmithing alive. I'm a general blacksmith. And what that means is that I can produce anything from, you know, hooks right the way through to if you want, you know, barbecues made or whatever. I also do, you know, fancy ironwork. But now, these days, the general blacksmithing becoming, you know, less and less required, and COVID making the sort of the artisan sort of, like, you know, like, I guess, popular again.
Yeah.
I've got more into the artistic side, more into the sculptural side, where people want bespoke pieces for their houses, for their gardens, and
okay,
COVID have actually done that.
Describe us a bespoke house piece you've done recently.
All right, okay. Well, I've done two or three of them. One of them was she's got a beautiful Art Nouveau house in Barrel, and she wanted a fire set, but she didn't want a normal, you know, one of those sort of just run-of-the-mill fire sets. She wanted something that complements her humongous fireplace. I think you could park a forest in there at one time.
Oh, right.
And so I designed her, because I design as well. I'm just a blacksmith. You actually have to sit down and design the pieces. So I designed the piece, and I made this beautiful, large Art Nouveau fireplace place setting for her, with a hanger and all the various pieces that she wanted, like a shovel and a brush and fire rake, and all handmade, and they're all designed around her her room. So there were pieces taken from her room that became part of the actual fire set. I just finished a huge a wrought iron entrance set for a client, again in Barrel. And he'd been to France and he'd seen something he really loved. But he said, I can't get it here. You can't go into a hardware store and just buy one. You've got to get one made. And he said, there aren't many people that do it the traditional way. There are a few of us, but there aren't many. And he said, can you build me a set of traditional gates? And I said, yeah, I can. And 3-4 months later, there's this beautiful set of gates now swinging in a driveway in East Barrel. So what's happened is that I think people have decided that when they build a house now, or when they want to do something in the garden, they're going, well, I might just spend a bit of extra money and get a local artisan, whether it be a woodworker or a metalworker, to do the job, you know what I mean?
Yep, yep.
Whereas before it was, oh, look, you know, I can't afford that. I'm just going to buy something that, you know, that's off the rack. But now, and it's youngsters too. It's not the more mature market. It's the young people coming up and saying, I don't want that rubbish anymore. I want something that's handmade. I want it made in Australia, preferably by an Australian.
Yeah, so, right. That's great.
Well, it is. It's really, really good. And it's sort of really helped blacksmithing, and it's really helped because I teach as well. I do a lot of teaching. And the youngsters that are coming through now are saying, I'd really like to learn how to do that, you know. And so it's great because that knowledge now is being passed on to future generations. And, you know, that is so important. We just don't, we mustn't lose that knowledge.
Yeah. It's quite a physical feat, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's interesting because people say it's very physical. I mean, you watch things with fire and all that, which I'm not knocking, but because they've done a tremendous PR job for metalsmithing. But yeah. Really, when it comes to reality, when you're forging all day and when you're working on pieces, you've got to know how to swing a hammer. You've got to know how to handle a hammer. You've got to know how to stand in front of them. An anvil. You've got to know how to use a power hammer. Otherwise, you really do injuries to your back, your shoulders, your wrists. And I don't think a lot of youngsters have been taught how to really handle the equipment properly.
Yep.
It's the first thing I teach is say, well, I know this might sound basic, but this is how you use a hammer and this is how you stand at an anvil. Because you're going to be standing at it all day and you want to make sure at the end of the day you're not crippled.
Yes. How long have you been doing it for now?
About 44 years. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. What's one of the weirdest things you've made?
One of the weirdest things I've made?
Has it been any kind of obscure or weird things?
Well, it was, no name, no pack drill. So this remain nameless.
Anonymous purchase.
And I know I'm on radio, so I've got to be very careful here. So the thing that I had to make once, this is a long time ago, it was for a movie set because I've done a lot of movie props in the past.
Okay.
In fact, I started off in movies, making stuff for movies. And you get some really weird requests, you know, people ask you for all sorts of strange things. Can you make this? Can you make that? Whether it be weaponry or whatever. And I had to make this contraption that had to be fitted to a young lady so she wouldn't be naughty when the master of the house went away.
Oh my
and they
God.
Were fitted to young ladies.
This is for a movie, right? Or is this for
real? It was for a movie, a period movie, and it was a girdle that I had to make, which was something that they wore. To keep them safe and not stray while the master was away for a few months, whether it be a war or... and I'm talking medieval, I'm talking that particular period.
Oh my God.
I guess that was the strangest thing.
Yeah, that definitely ticks strange thing for me.
Strange, bizarre, and another time in another place. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, Steve Hogwood, thank you so much for your time this morning. Good luck procuring that equipment in Wagga.
Yeah, thank you. I'm hoping that I can procure it. We'll see how we go.
Yep.
And thank you for having me on your show.
Oh my God,
really
it's great.
That.
Great chatting to you. I think it's really interesting. I agree with you. There seems to be this resurgence of the appreciation of artisanal crafts. So it's lovely to kind of talk to someone who's going through that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
Have a great
You too. You have a fabulous day. And I've been